The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Irish criminals are exporting drugs as far as Australia, so says a Europol report published this week. Europol also noted that drug gangs here are expanding their operations in rural towns rather than simply selling to dealers in those towns. To look at the money involved, we're joined by Pat, a former criminal who served time in two Irish prisons and whose voice we disguise for this interview, and Nicola Tallant from the Sunday World. Pat, I'll come to you first. When we see newspaper headlines about gangland shootings week to week, do you think the middle class bears some responsibility for what's happening with drugs?
There used to be, like, here in Ireland, when they used to speak about the IRA and the stuff going on the north, and any time you put money into a box or a bottle of paper or something, everyone said you were putting another bullet in a gun to kill somebody. I would say we've kind of moved on from that, where this is kind of narco-terrorism, and every time shipment comes into the country, there's weapons. You know, they're giving us sweeteners, you know, and of course these gangs need weapons. If you look at all the recent hits and all, what stuck out to me in the latest report was they said there was no weapon left in the car. So weapons are being used and they're being left in the cars and burned in the cars, they're being dumped. That will tell you how prevalent guns are in the country.
So let's look at the money. How does it work, given your own experience and knowledge of it, in terms of the buy for one value, sell for multiples of that?
Well, it's said that on the streets today, like, a gram of cocaine is like 60 euro. So if you think there's 1,000 grams in a kilo, that's 60,000 euro coming in to somebody, you know. And then if they put in the mixing agents, well, then that 1,000 grams probably becomes 1,200 grams, you know. So you're always adding to it. And then when it's given down to the dealers, the street level dealers, they'll probably cut it again, you know. So everybody kind of cuts it.
Nicola, this is huge business. How are they going about organising themselves? Are they becoming more creative, innovative about how they go about getting drugs into the country?
They are, and as that recent European report showed, they're even being creative as regards when they do get them in, how to multiply the value of them again, and in some cases transporting them by human mules to Australia, where cocaine is four times the value on the streets in Australia than it is here. But there is no drug or any other consumer product, I think, that grows in value to such an extent as cocaine. When it starts out in Colombia, it's about 125 equivalent of dollars, say euro, per kilo to create that kilo of crushed coca is going to cost 125. By the time it gets down as far as where it's to be transported, it's worth about $2,000, right? And then it starts making its way over here, mostly through Western Africa now, and then on up into Europe. By the time, as Pat says, it hits the streets in Dublin, it's 60,000. There they start bulking it up with talcum powder, with laxatives. They use teething powder. There's lots of reports at the moment from hospitals and that the substance is purer because there's so much competition in the market, so much demand. But at the same time, I have to say I haven't come across a dealer that doesn't bulk it up because it doubles their value. It can treble the value. They feel they're taking a risk and they're going to make maximum profit out of it.
And are there new markets now, or are we seeing an oversaturation of supplies?
Well, I mean, they're talking about, you know, a saturation in Europe, but the value of the drug market in Europe is 30 billion and it does appear to be still growing. So Europe is growing too. There is sort of very high-end drug dealers now. I mean, you're talking about the top tier that are looking to new markets. They're looking to India. They're looking to China. They're looking further east to see, you know, where they can develop new markets. But 30 billion is quite a healthy market anyway to be trading in Europe, which is why you see so much competition. You see so much murder, so much, you know, misery that goes along with that. It's an unregulated world. It's not regulated by a banking system, by a court system. People will accuse others of owing debts, and really it's down to one person's word against another, and I suppose one person's power versus another's. So, you know, it is. There's a lot of money there, a lot of competition. There's 5,000 gangs you know, identified organised crime gangs working in Europe. And certainly one of ours, one of the Irish gangs, has made it to the top of that pile.
And Pat, Nicola speaks there of an unregulated world. It's one person's word against another's. How do these guys do deals? How do they actually split the monies between them?
Depends. If you look at it, like, as I call it, narco-terrorism, and one of the reasons why I call it that is, not only are they holding society and whole areas to ransom, they have a structure. You know, if you look at military structures, you know, there's someone at the top, they have the lieutenants, and you see it in the paper all the time, they call them lieutenants, so just for the sake of this broadcast, we call them like lieutenants, and then they're going to come down to the people that, you know, say the capos come down, and then they would bring it on down to their dealers, you know, so there's a structure there, and the money goes up and goes back. It's it's not really unlike, you know, taxes coming in, you know what I mean, we're sending them on. You know, it's the same kind of principle, you know, there's a hierarchy and there's a structure there, you know.
And here in Ireland, do you think the market is getting bigger, the cocaine is getting cheaper?
Yeah, very much so. If you look at some of the recent reports, we're actually the fourth highest per session coke taken in the world. We're actually ahead of the States. You know, the US, I think, is fifth, we're fourth, you know, so it's massive.
Nicola, what does the life of these guys actually look like day to day? What are they spending that money on?
Well, this is it. I mean, I suppose the younger they are, and you'll see how young they are with the feud in Coolock. I mean, there's five people murdered since the beginning of the year, and I think four of them are in their very early 20s. So when they're young like that, they don't have much sense or structure for the money. The older they get and the longer they're in the game, they do have a network of launderers and, I suppose, white-collar criminals that are working alongside them. They have developed businesses to launder their money through the car industry. There would be, you know, a lot of hairdressing salons, this kind of stuff, restaurant industry. They've developed that. But the younger they are, they get large amounts of money very quickly. They blow it very quickly. They spend it like there's no tomorrow, and they're also giving it away nearly. You know, you find very quickly that while they're in the drug game, there's all of a sudden 6-7 dependents hanging out of them. It could be women, other family members, all the rest of this. So it's all a little bit of a foe. The money to me seems to slightly vaporize. They'll spend it very quickly. They'll spend it stupidly because they don't know how to and can't invest it. So they might make, for example, you could be paid between 20 and 100,000 for a hit. So somebody will go out, take up that job, shoot somebody dead and get paid that money. And they might then, with their 20,000, go and book a holiday that would be 15,000 quid's worth of a holiday, which makes no economic sense. Nothing's been put away for a rainy day. From an earning point of view, it's just blowing every penny you get. And all of a sudden, you're back to square one and you're back for another job. So it's slightly nonsensical. The higher up they go, obviously, the more organised the finances become. And there does come a stage within the drug dealing gangs or the organised crime gangs that they almost become legitimate because they've made so much money, they've started investing in legitimate industries all over the world. And that's really when they become a little bit untouchable.
Pat, what's your experience of that murky world that Nicola describes? Do you recognise it? What's your experience of it?
Yeah, very much so. My own experience years ago when we kind of were all caught up in that kind of things, we were buying cars and houses and holidays, and you know, always had 10 extra friends, you know, stuff like that. So that does come with the territory. At the same time, it's, if you look at areas, like an area I grew up in, there was very little employment. I mean, at the time, in the 80s, you needed to leave and say, to pack shelves and dunce. You know, so you have someone coming in there and it's like easy money and people take it regardless. You know, like Nicola said, some of them are just not, they're not wide, you know what I mean? They just haven't got that sense, you know what I mean? And the hierarchy will play on that. We'll play on vulnerable people. I've done it myself in the past, you know what I mean? I have people delivering stuff for me, out of favour, or hold this for me, or, you know, things like that. You'd be giving them £100 to bring a kilo of stuff somewhere for you. crazy, like, you know, and that's the environment that I grew up in. And a lot of youngsters now today are growing up in them environments, you know, you're talking about Coolock there. And yeah, you know, you've Coolock, you've Ballymun, you've, you know, Fingles, you've Blanchestown, Ballyfermot, Clondalkin, all the feud that's going on in them areas, you know, they're all low socioeconomic areas.
And with that network effect that you described there, for you, how far up in that ladder did you get in the wheeling and dealing?
See, it was a bit more easy to rise when I was doing what I was doing because there was no real organisations of stuff. I kind of made my network within the prison system. I met a lot of people in prison and I would have started dealing and then through family members taking hash off me and, you know, they'd be like, that's good hash, and, you know, someone would say, where'd you get that? And I can get it for you. And I kind of had a network then going from Cork to Dublin. No, why we bypassed Limerick, but we did at the time. It was Cork, Dublin, Drogheda, Belfast. And that was the route, you know, people in all them different places, you know. And I was getting it cheap as well at the time.
Where do you think the vulnerabilities still are today in the country in terms of drugs getting into, let's say, our prisons and money being laundered, as Nicola talked about there?
Look, if you go back to Pat Rabbit in 1996 and the Rabbit Report, and he realised, and it was the first ministerial body that ever actually set, it wasn't just, you know, people set, put in place, civil servants, they actually set as a ministerial body, and they set, and they realised that they had to walk from the ground up. And that came about from the concerned parents, you know, marching on the streets and all, and people in the media realised we have to do something about this. They took action and they started walking from the ground up. But every time there's a recession or funding has to be cut, they cut the services, you know what I mean, and they hit them areas. So if you're cutting services in those areas, and there's no, you know, people haven't got jobs or they haven't got access to education or, you know, housing, how do you get a house then? You buy one. How do I buy one? I can't get a job, I'm not educated. Well, I'll rob or I'll do armed robberies or easy money, I'll sell drugs. And a lot of the hierarchy would be very versed in targeting people like that.
In the wheeling and dealing of this, is it like any organisation, some people are better at negotiation than others in terms of that rise and fall through the networks?
The rise and fall comes with violence. It's a statement of intent, you know. It's seen recent reports in the paper where, you know, certain cartel in Ireland are handing patches to people. You know, you're there, lad, there you go, you get in. And it doesn't matter who was there before you or who was better. You're there, man, and they put you in, you know.
Nicola, to Pat's point, is that your experience?
Well, I have to say it certainly rings through when you have the likes of overlords like the Kinahan cartel, and they would have basically, anybody working for them in an area, they would have just had held ultimate power, ultimate control. So if they said, if they told you you owed money, you paid them up. Nobody threatened them for a long time. Nobody would have fronted them up. In the last couple of years, we've seen the dismantling of the cartel here in Ireland. There's a lot of people in jail, a lot of them on the run. A lot of the sort of serious middlemen have just disappeared and a vacuum has created. Now, people coming into that vacuum who are still trying to use the name of the Kinahan cartel have found themselves becoming challenged by others in the area who are no longer, you know, that afraid of them. And I suppose really that's the heart of the matter, the fear factor. Whoever holds the greatest fear factor are the ones that are in charge.
And Pat, given that drug dealers, prisoners move between prisons across this country, is that exasperating the problem?
It's part of the problem. I don't know whether it's exasperating, but it's definitely part of the problem. I know a lot of the connections I made, like when I was a teenager and gone into prison, I didn't know anybody from Cork. You know, I didn't know anybody from Belfast. I didn't know anyone from the Louth area. I made them connections in prison, you know. And then when you got out, you know, you kind of built on them, you know. And like that, I would have went around as well, knowing what I was coming out to try and do. And I would have looked at who were the main players between the Cork lads, the Drogheda lads, Belfast, you know what I mean? Who was the most feared, you know what I mean? And then it was up to him what he'd done. But as long as he took my product, that was grand.
Okay, there we leave it. Pat and Nicola Tallant, Investigations Editor with the Sunday World, thank you.